Morning, everyone.
Good morning, everyone. As
Margie
stated, the time is 9:30, and this meeting of the BCDC Enforcement Committee is hereby called to order. My name is Marie Gilmore, and I am the chair of this committee. For commissioners, please ensure that the video camera is always on, and please mute yourself when you are not speaking. So our first order of the business is to call roll. Matthew, please call the roll. Commissioners, please unmute yourselves while he does this to respond, and then mute yourselves after responding.
Okay, here we go. Commissioner Eisen?
Here.
Commissioner Vasquez?
Here.
Chair Gilmore?
Here. We have a quorum present and are duly constituted to conduct business. And that brings us to item 3 on our agenda, which is public comment. In accordance with our usual practice, and as indicated on the agenda, we will now have general public comment on items not on today's agenda. We have received 2 general comments and a copy of which has been linked to this agenda item on our website. For members of the public, if you would like to speak either during the general public comment period or during the public comment period for an item on the agenda, please raise your hand in the Zoom application by clicking on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and look in the box where your name is listed under attendees. Find the small palm icon on the left. If you click on the palm icon, it will raise your hand. Or if you are joining this meeting by phone, you must dial *9 to raise your hand, then dial *6 on your keypad to unmute your phone when the host asks you in order to make a comment. The meeting host will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order in which they were raised. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so that you can share your comments. Please announce yourself by first and last name for the record before making your comment. Commenters are limited to 3 minutes to speak. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We are here to listen to any individual who requests to speak, but each speaker has the responsibility to act in a civil and courteous manner as determined by the chair. We will not tolerate hate speech, direct threats, indirect threats, or abusive language. We will mute anyone who fails to follow those guidelines. Once again, this is a call for general public comments on topics that are not on today's agenda. Margie, do we have any raised hands by the public?
Chair Gilmore, I don't see any raised hands, but I want to comment. Attending today for Sherry Posner is AGO Patrick Chuck.
Welcome. Thank you.
Hello. Yes, thank you for having me.
Okay. Since there are no public comments, we are on to item number 4, which is approval of the draft minutes for the last meeting. We have all been furnished with draft minutes from the last meeting, which was held on February 22nd, 2023. Committee members, I'd appreciate a motion and a second to approve these.
So moved.
I'll second.
Moved by Commissioner Eisen, seconded by Commissioner Vasquez. Are there any comments, abstentions, or anything else?
Just Commissioner Ranch, I just wanted to know that I've joined. Sorry for arriving late.
Oh, thank you. Welcome. We're just about to approve the minutes. So are there any objections to approving the minutes from February 22nd, 2023? Okay, then the motion to approve the minutes passes unanimously. Thank you all. Okay. Item 5 on the agenda is the enforcement report, and Enforcement Policy Manager Matthew Trujillo will now provide the enforcement report. Take it away, Matthew.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, committee members. Welcome, Patrick. Just 2 items to report on today, very short. The first item is a case update since our last meeting on February 22nd, 2023. So in the last 2 months, we've received 15 new cases. We've resolved 19 new cases. And as of today, there are 79 unresolved cases in the queue. And then the second is an update on our efforts to fill the CPA2 vacancy, the Coastal Program Analyst 2 vacancy. We still have received no applications for this position. We are working on looking at the posting and see if there's an issue there. One thing I plan to do is this week, I'm going to repost the position under a more general name in hopes that it will help the job to pop up in searches more frequently. Right now it's called something to the effect of journey person enforcement analyst, which doesn't really roll off the tongue and probably doesn't show up in too many searches when you think about it. So I'm thinking scale that back, call it Coastal Program Analyst 2, get some eyes on it. But of course, any help that you can give in terms of spreading the word to your various contacts is welcome. And that concludes my report. I'll be happy to entertain any follow-up questions about the status of the enforcement program at this time.
Thank you, Matthew. Do any committee members have questions for Matthew? Commissioner Eisen.
Hi, Matthew, do you have a goal for 2023 as to how many cases you hope to be down to? I know we're at, would you say 79 now? And do you have a goal, or is it just, let's just do the best we can between now and then?
Well, that's a good question. So short answer is no, there's no specific goal. However, I've been spending the first quarter really working on clearing out kind of doing a lot of housekeeping, clearing out the cases that are still kind of lingering open that don't really have a purpose anymore, changing those statuses. We've trying to clarify and distill what we're really looking at. The 79 cases that I showed you, those are cases where, you know, as far as we know, for, you know, at this stage, we actually have work that needs to do on those cases at various stages, whether it be, you know, starting the case from scratch or collecting fines. My strategy on trying to pare that down even further, and I'm hoping to do, I would say in terms of like a goal, maybe get that down into the 50s. Through various methods, such as, you know, trying to capture the low-hanging fruit. If something has been kind of lingering because we got to a certain stage and then we had a turnover in employees, going back and getting those things wrapped up. Mm-hmm. At the same time, for the new cases coming in, we're trying to continue to push the process that we've been developing over the past, you know, since 2019, which is putting them on a milestone process and keeping that going very robustly. And so I'm hoping that in that vein, I'll be able to get the cases down, but I don't anticipate being able to clear out the caseload, the backlog this year.
Oh, no, I wouldn't think all of them. But and then my second question about the position, the analyst position. And I don't know if this is OK to do, but maybe if we could be sent, really all the commissioners sent a description of the position that we could forward on. Okay. Yeah. Satisfactorily, because I'm not sure all the commissioners are really aware of the need. I mean, maybe they are, but I let it slip off my mindset after a while. So keeping it right there where we could, oh, gosh, now I've thought of somebody I can forward this to. Maybe that would help a little bit.
Sure, I could definitely try and do that. I'm going to have to consult with Human Resources to make sure it's all up and up. But if... Yeah. That's possible. I'll definitely put that in motion. Thank you for the offer.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Bye.
Actually, I think that was a great suggestion. I think even if we can't forward it on, it would be nice to have a succinct copy of the job description, because I can say to somebody, we have an analyst position two open, and then they would ask me, well, what does that entail? And I go, not sure.
Okay.
So I think that would be very helpful, if nothing else, just a description. And then I had a question, Matthew. When is our next update to the state auditors due? I keep losing track of that.
I believe it's an annual process, and it's due probably in October.
All right. Thank you. Any other committee questions for Matthew? Okay, seeing none, do any members of the public have comments on the enforcement report?
I don't see any hands raised.
Okay, thank you, Margie. So our next agenda item is item six, which is a briefing on the anchor out abatement and eelgrass restoration effort in Richardson Bay by the Richardson Bay Regional Agency, also known as RBRA. So at this time, will the representative or representatives from the RBRA please identify themselves for the record?
I'll go ahead and start. Good morning.
Brad Gross. I see a hand.
Good morning, Chair Gilmore. I'm Brad Gross. I'm the Executive Director of Richardson Bay Regional Agency. And with us today, I have Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg, our environmental expert, and Jim Malcolm, our harbor master.
Great. Thank you and welcome. Thank you for being here today and welcome. So now I'm going to invite Adrienne Klein of BCDC staff to give her introduction. Adrienne?
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Gilmore. Good morning to the committee members, our RBRA colleagues, and the members of the public who have joined us. So I'm Adrienne Klein. This settlement agreement that requires monthly reporting to staff. It requires quarterly reports to the enforcement committee and an annual report to the commission, which just occurred on February 16th this year. Today, the Richardson Bay Regional Agency, or RBRA, staff will review its accomplishments during the first quarter of 2023. And I'll provide a brief introduction, which will be familiar to most of you, as it is a condensed version of the staff introduction provided to the commission on February 16th. Just one second. Let me see. There we go. So in September 2021, you authorize the executive director to enter into a settlement agreement with the RBRA to promote the management of the waters of Richardson Bay in a manner that is consistent with the public trust and with the Mackachaw-Petras Act, the San Francisco Bay Plan, and the Richardson Bay Special Area Plan. And this is just a quick map to orient everyone. So the settlement agreement is between BCDC and the RBRA, which is a joint powers agreement whose members are, as you know, Marin County, the town of Tiburon, and the cities of Mill Valley and Belvedere. The settlement agreement lays out the steps that will result in the end of an era of allowing long-term anchoring of unseaworthy vessels occupied as residences and for storage, the ground tackle from which is believed to have resulted in between 50 and 85 acres of damage to the 300 to 650 acres of subtidal eelgrass habitat in Richardson Bay. There is believed to be 2,400 acres bay-wide, and eelgrass is well known to support herring spawn and many bird species. So just to quickly summarize the terms of the agreement, it requires the RBRA to return the Marin County waters and waters of the cities of Tiburon, Belvedere, and Mill Valley to a public trust compliant condition by removing vessels occupied as residences, stored vessels, and houseboats, all anchored offshore and not in a marina. And to cause this removal from Richardson Bay by 2020, to prevent the reoccupation of Richardson Bay waters by future anchor outs by enforcing local ordinances that limit the duration of stay of new influx vessels to prevent future adverse impacts to subtidal habitats, including eelgrass, such as by establishing and enforcing no anchoring in the eelgrass protection zone. 4, to restore eelgrass habitat that has been damaged by the anchor scour, by creating and implementing an eelgrass restoration plan that is consistent with the California eelgrass mitigation policy, and that includes a 10-year adaptive management plan, and you will be hearing about that progress today, to cooperate in regional efforts to identify alternate housing and other supportive resources for the occupants of the vessels anchored on the public trust lands, and finally, to coordinate waterfront management efforts with the city of Sausalito in recognition of the fact that the anchor outs on county waters come ashore through city waters and onto city of Sausalito lands. So this slide, which I hope is legible, was presented by the RBRA to the commission on February 16th, and it's a good summary of the actions taken and planned by the RBRA to achieve the settlement agreement milestones. And so you can see the due dates in the third column and the status in the fourth column. I can give you a chance to digest that. So I can go to the next slide now. And this final slide before I turn the floor over just raises a few questions that you may wish to consider, among others, to discuss with the RBRA following their presentations. And with that, I will now turn the floor over to Brad Gross, RBRA Executive Director, to commence the RBRA staff presentation. Thank you. And I'll be running their slides.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank you. Thank you, Adrian. I appreciate it. Chair Gilmore, members of the committee and staff, thank you for the opportunity to, for us to update this committee on our latest activities and our successes. As you all know, and I'm not going to give you any history. You've heard all the history. We're going to talk about up-to-date issues, but we did give our annual presentation to the full BCDC committee just 8 weeks ago. So again, we're just going to cover what has happened very recently and update you on some of our more important initiatives. I'll provide a few comments, and then our contracted environmental expert, Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg, will give an eelgrass update, followed by our harbor master, Jim Malcolm, who will give an update on activities at the anchorage. One of the most exciting updates I get to provide is that we have finally received the funding from the state, thanks to Senator Gilmore, so that we can kick off our temporary housing voucher program for those in the Anchorage seeking housing assistance. We've already contracted with Marin Housing Authority to find the actual housing. And next week on the 18th, the County of Marin Board of Supervisors will consider an agreement between our RBRA and Marin Health and Human Services to provide wraparound services for those in the program. We've already had logistics meetings between RBRA, MHA, HHS in anticipation of this program starting on May 1st. Dovetailing with the temporary housing voucher program is a vessel buyback program. This program expired on December 31st, 2022, but at tonight's RBRA Board of Directors meeting, we will be requesting reinstatement of the vessel buyback program to provide additional support for those taking advantage of the temporary housing voucher program. Basically, when a boater turns in their vessel to RBRA, we have the funding available to pay them up to $150 per foot as you're at the waterline of their vessel. And we're also contracting with a local nonprofit, Marin Link, to provide immediate payment. So once the paperwork is completed and the vessel is signed over to RBRA for disposal, the participant will immediately get a check. We will provide updates on the anticipated success of these programs the very next time we meet. That's really all I have for updates. Now I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Schwartz-Lesberg to go over the next slides. So the next slide, please, Adrian. Rebecca, thank you.
Thank you, Rad. Good morning, Chill Gilmore, commissioners, enforcement staff. Good to see you all. My name is Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg. I'm the president of Coastal Policy Solutions, and I've been working with RBRA to implement their eelgrass protection and management efforts for the past several years. As a note, my neighbors are having construction done to their house, and my dogs have some opinions on that. They've been quiet all morning, but with my luck, now will be the time when they express those opinions. So I apologize in advance. These are some updates on what has been going on since the February 16th presentation to the full commission. Similar to that presentation, we are continuing implementation of the eelgrass protection and management plan. So when you see EPMP, that's what that stands for. In the past couple of months, we received the results from our 2022 side scan sonar survey of Richardson Bay eelgrass. I'll go over some of the results from that scan in the next couple of slides. We've also concluded our 2022-2023 waterbird monitoring season. So that goes from November or October through March. The report on that we should be getting by the end of June. We are still waiting to hear from the Coast Guard about a decision on our petition for rulemaking. Again, that petition for rulemaking describes RBRA's authority to implement the eelgrass protection zone and other limitations on anchoring in Richardson Bay. As a reminder, local Coast Guard staff felt that the existing Code of Federal Regulations provided adequate coverage for RBRA to implement those actions, but we did submit a petition for rulemaking to clarify that even further. The Coast Guard confirmed that they received our petition, and we are waiting to hear what their decision will be. And then ongoing this whole time are community presentations in social media and earned media about the importance of eelgrass and what RBRA is doing to protect it in Richardson Bay. So outside of the EPMP implementation, as we let the commission know in February, RBRA and its partners were selected for a competitive grant from the US EPA, from their San Francisco Bay Water Quality Improvement Fund program. That's $2.8 million for a four-year, 15-acre eelgrass restoration program in Richardson Bay, the first task of which is to develop the restoration and adaptive management plan that Ms. Klein referred to earlier in the presentation. So right now we are working with EPA staff. We've been selected for the grant, but there's all of the I's to dot, T's to cross, developing the work plan, the budget, and all of the required federal forms. So EPA staff has everything, and we should be getting our grant agreement in the next couple of weeks, depending on how the wheels of federal government turn. Next slide. Okay, so the side scan sonar survey that I mentioned. About every 3 years in Richardson Bay since 2003, various partners have conducted a survey to map all of the eelgrass in Richardson Bay. Now, this differs from the flyover survey that I shared earlier, which just focuses on damage to the eelgrass from anchor scour. In contrast, this report actually documents the entire extent of eelgrass and its density throughout Richardson Bay. This is done by having a research vessel in the water. It basically runs transects back and forth, shooting a sonar beam at the bay floor that generates these images of where eelgrass is and how dense it is. In the image on the right of your screen, the green shows where eelgrass is present in Richardson Bay. This report did not really have any surprises. We have the same general pattern of eelgrass cover in Richardson Bay as previous years, where we have the densest portion of the bed just off the shore of Sausalito, and then it gets
less dense as you reach into the shallows. Let's see, can you, you can't see my mouse, can you? No. So that area right along the edge of Sausalito, you can see some of the crop circles or those anchor scour, evidence of anchor scour just off Sausalito. So that's able to be captured there in the side scan sonar survey, which is what we expected to find, because while we do see some evidence of recovery in anchor scars where boats have been removed, as you know, that's an ongoing process. We also have eelgrass present in those shallower reaches. So up in that northern and northeastern, exactly, yeah, that area of Richardson Bay, that's much shallower than in where the eelgrass bed is denser. The reasons for that kind of more patchy distribution is that it's much warmer in the much warmer by eelgrass standards in that area. So there's some thermal stress going on. And we've seen some evidence of eelgrass wasting disease. Now, eelgrass wasting disease, it's a pathogen that is present throughout California. It has been observed in San Francisco Bay for many years. Usually it is a very low-lying pathogen. We don't see large impacts from it. In some years, it does spread more than others. We don't exactly, we being the scientific community, don't exactly know why some years eelgrass wasting disease is worse than others. There are thoughts that it can be affected by temperature, salinity. And so, you know, which, this past summer was the, you know, before we got all of this cold weather and rain. So it was saltier, it was warmer. We could see that change after this winter with our very high rainfall that we've seen. And then as expected, there's a pretty sharp line below which we really don't see any eelgrass. That's in that lower right-hand corner. That line effectively matches the 5 feet mean lower low water contour. And that's very consistent with the depth limits of eelgrass, and it's mostly light limited. So in total, across all cover classes, there's about 956 acres of eelgrass identified in Richardson Bay this year, but only about 400 of those acres are in the 40 to 100% cover class. And I'll talk about that a little bit more on the next slide. And as a note, this survey was completed by Merkel and Associates. Next slide. So one of the things that we're able to do with these data is to look at how eelgrass distribution has changed through time in Richardson Bay. We have survey data from, if we look at this chart on the right, from 2003, 09, 13, 14, 19, and 22. 13 and 14, we had very depressed eelgrass cover. It was much lower than the other years. And overall, we've seen a generally increasing trend in eelgrass. The thing to look at, though, so it's sort of a mixed bag. It's good news that we have more eelgrass than we did before. There are some concerns, though, because this 100, this dashed line is basically tracking 100% cover equivalency. And so when we talk about cover class, that 40 to 100%, that darkest green, that's where the eelgrass is densest, which is a good proxy for how healthy it is and how much ecosystem function we're getting from it. In the lighter categories, it's sparser, it's not providing as good of habitat for fish and invertebrates, not able to provide the other ecosystem services such as, you know, shoreline stabilization, sediment stabilization, carbon sequestration. Really, you know, where we're getting our most bang for our buck with eelgrass is in that 40 to 100% cover class. So that darkest green bar, as we can see, is still highly variable through the years. That dashed line is basically, if you take, it's basically a weighted average. And collapsing down, you know, if we have about 200 acres in the less than 5% cover class, it's basically multiplying that 200 acres by 0.05 to getting the 100% equivalency. I could go more into the math and the science behind that, but basically to see that dashed line is basically what is our really healthy dense eelgrass trend, and that's the dashed line. So overall, this side-scan sonar survey told us a lot of what we expected to see. There's some good stuff going on out there. There's, it's a, in other ways, it's a bit of a mixed bag, and highlights the importance of continuing to track eelgrass trends through time. Do I have another slide, Adrian? Nope. Okay. If you go back one slide, go back to my other slide. So that's all that I have to share about eelgrass. And then at the end, happy to take any questions. So I'll hand it back to Brad to introduce Harbor Master Malcolm.
Thank you, Rebecca. I appreciate your effort on this. Next, we have Harbor Master Malcolm, who's got some very exciting news about our vessel's floating home update. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Brad. Good morning, Chair Gilmore, Enforcement Committee Commissioners, and Enforcement staff. As mentioned, I'm Jim Malcolm, the Harbor Master for the Richardson Bay Regional Agency. Providing this update to update your committee about the status of the vessels and floating homes on the anchorage since the full commission was updated in February. Our current total vessel floating home count is 52. That's a reduction in a vessel count by five since the February update. Of those five, is included one floating home, which during the last large March storm went adrift and subsequently sunk. That floating home has actually just been recovered from its location and is waiting final recovery from the water and disposal. Otherwise, for vessels, other incidents as a result of the brutal winter we've been having, two vessels sunk or were completely lost due to weather. One vessel, the one floating home went adrift and grounded. Of the vessels that were sunk or completely lost, or of all vessels that were removed from the anchorage, there were no personal injuries. Several vessels broke loose or drug anchor off of the anchorage and were recovered by the anchor outs and brought back to their position on the anchorage. As mentioned, our current metrics, we have a 52 total and zero new arrivals since the update in February. And with that, that is the short and sweet update on the anchorage. Now I'll turn it back over to Director Gross. Oh, sorry, one more slide. As far as vessels in the eelgrass protection zone, the bulk of the storms, the bulk of the major storms that came through the area were from the south. So vessels that were outside the eelgrass protection zone got pushed to the north. So hence the dip to 46 and then back up to 48 for vessels in the eelgrass protection zone. And active efforts continue to get those vessels removed from the eelgrass protection zone and back to the southern reaches of the anchorage and out of the eelgrass.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate the information. Chair Gilmore, all three of us are available if there are any questions that we can answer.
Thank you very much for the briefing. So do any enforcement committee members have any additional questions either for staff or the RBRA?
I don't see any.
I actually have one question. Given how severe the storms were in the first quarter and the difficulties in the anchor out vessels remaining in place, have you noticed any, softening of some of the positions of the anchor outs to be more receptive to
solutions on land? Because I would imagine that riding out some of those storms must have been terrifying.
Thank you for the question, Chair Gilmore. Definitely. A lot of what we're seeing, people, it's not an easy lifestyle to live on those vessels, those types of vessels in those conditions. And this was a severe winter, and I think it opened up a lot of eyes on some of those folks that are out there. There's some that are, you know, the hardy mariners that want to stick it out, and they'll stick it out for as long as they can. But I think what's more important right now is that we have programs that we've been talking about for years that are all coming to a starting point, specifically the temporary housing voucher program and reinstating the vessel buyback program in combination with the severe storms that we had over the winter. We're going to see, we've already been told by the caseworkers that have been waiting, that we have people waiting in line to take advantage of some of these opportunities. And it's really going to be more of a issue with how many that we can service at one time. I believe there's more people willing to step into these programs that we can handle at one time. So I think it's good news. And at our next meeting, I think we'll have some good information for you regarding that.
Well, thank you for that update. I mean, that seems like a big change, because I feel like for years we've been hearing that the anchor outs were very resistant to considering land-based solutions. So hopefully this marks a real turning point.
I believe, and I think some, a lot of people will tell you, they believe, not everybody. I mean, I imagine by any stake of the main, it means that we're going to get everybody. As we approach deadlines, we're going to have pushback. We'll probably have some litigation. We have some litigation now, but I think we're going to see some good movement in that direction. And as we, again, as we approach the deadlines, it'll be easier to tell you what we envision the future efforts are going to need.
Thank you. Any committee members have any questions or comments at this time? Okay, so we're gonna take public comments on this item, which is item number 6 on the agenda. But first, Margie, have we received any written public comments on this item?
No, Chair Gilmore.
And do you see any members of the public waiting to speak?
None.
Okay, well then we will not be having public comment. All right, so thank you very much to staff and the RBRA for presenting. Do any enforcement committee members have any final thoughts or comments on this? Okay, seeing none, we are ready for item 7. Which is adjournment, and I would like to entertain a motion in a second to adjourn our meeting.
I'll comment on that. I'll move that we adjourn.
Second.
Okay, motion to adjourn made by Commissioner Vasquez, second by Commissioner Eisen. All in favor, just raise your hands. And thank you very much, everyone, for your time, your attention, and the excellent presentations that we received today. Have a great rest of your day. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.